हरिः ॐ सहनावावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So page 29. Vijaya.
How are Bhaktya Bas, Bhava Bas, Nama Bas, and Vaishnava Bas related to one another? Raghunath Das Babaji. A Vaishnava is someone who engages in chanting Hari Nam. When he practices chanting on the platform of Bhaktya Bas, his chanting is Nama Bas, and accordingly he is called Vaishnava Bas, not a Shuddha Bhakta. In this context, bhakti and bhava mean one and the same thing. However, according to the different states of development of bhakti, bhakti is described as being either in the restricted form of abhasa or in the full-blown form of shuddha. The Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.47 states, a devotee who faithfully engages in the worship of the deity in the temple but does not behave properly towards other devotees or people in general is called a Prakriti Bhakta, a materialistic devotee, and is considered to be in the lowest position, right? Lowest means within the Vaishnav category, within transcendental. It doesn't mean within the whole, category of the world. It means still, means they're devotees, so they're transcendental, so they're better than anyone else, no matter how nice or wonderful they are, right? But he's just meaning within the transcendental, because we're taking prema as standard, right? In the spiritual world, prema is the standard, commodity that everybody has. No one has less than that, right? So that's standard. Then you have those that are higher realms of prema, right? But just prema is considered standard. So therefore, that's why within it, then that is the mature form of shuddha bhakti, right? So then the madhyama is the lowest form of shuddha bhakti. Right, so that means below that's then what we're saying is therefore the lowest. Right? Because we're taking it when you get to pure devotion, that's called advanced. Right? So then Madhyama is advanced. The Bhava Bhakta is more advanced, right? The Prema Bhakta is most advanced. Does that make sense? Just so we get the proportions here. Because when we're saying this, we're not saying there's a problem with the neophyte. What we're saying is it's just the beginning stage of what is available. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So therefore, it's not something that we should be comfortable with remaining as. We should try to progress, because then it becomes dynamic at pure devotional service. Right? Right. But the weakness here, as pointed out, is he worships the deity in the temple, so he's nice towards Krishna, and therefore towards Krishna's representative, guru. But generally, the devotees in general, they don't know how to behave nicely. That tends to be the condition, right? So that's one of the symptoms. They're more advanced is they're able to deal with devotees nicer, right? In general, they behave nicely. Does that make sense? It's common. Like you see rich people. Then if you're rich, they're nice to you. If they're not rich, they're not. I remember once, I think it was Atmatattva. He was on a flight. And somehow or another, he got bumped up to first class, right? He was back in the cattle class. But he got bumped up into first class, right? And so I even heard some people call it steerage. Now I understand. That's where all the steers are, the cattle are. So steerage class, yeah. So he got bumped up in the first class. And he's very intelligent, very good talker. He's, from high-grade Brahmin family, can move with very cultured people. So he's there in the first class, and there's some other, you know, rich, fat guy there, and he's talking with him and that, and the guy's very impressed by his philosophy, his character, his personality, everything, you know? And that, until the one point when they got talking about karma, and Atmatattva gave the example of, you have one thing, and then something else happens. Like I was in, you know, back in the, you know, economy, and then I got bumped up into first class. He was giving that as an example. From that moment, the guy just lost interest talking to him. He's going, what, you're from economy? He only wanted to talk to him because he's first class, amongst the first class. Okay, you're interesting, you know? You have a philosophy, you know, you're a bit different, you know, something unique, right? He gets bored on all those flights, right? You know, here's somebody different, right? So that's the difficulties. The Prakriti tends to do that. It means whatever is the interest, the common interest of this or that, or the spiritual, okay, Krishna's spiritual, Guru's spiritual, one or two other people are spiritual, and everybody else is just kind of ordinary. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the special. So we can see is how they deal with others, that's actually how special they are. If you think everybody's ordinary, you're ordinary. If you think they're special, you're special. Basically, that's the symptom. So that's why this is mentioned. So this is 11th canto, so this would be Krishna talking here. Yes?
Maharaj, in this case, they run into the difficulty of association because who wants to associate with this kind of devotees? Because they don't know how to behave, maybe Guru or maybe Krishna.
That's why, remember we were saying before about compassion.
Compassion.
Right? Remember that whole thing about one is, you know, respectful to those above you, friends with equals, compassionate towards others. And compassion meant, you know, spending that time with that. So that's the key. That's the, the saving grace of the neophyte is that by, duty and specific position that those who are more advanced associate.
So those are the duties of Madhyamadikari.
Yes. Like that. And then the Uttamadhikari functions on the platform of the Madhyama. You know, so he does that. Otherwise, the Uttama, we see like Sukadev Goswami, he's wandering around. He's, you know, surrounded by all kinds of villagers, you know, either amazed at, you know, his position or thinking he's crazy. But he's not talking to anybody. He's not preaching to anybody. And he's being nice. Right, you know, the ladies are smiling, he smiles, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, the kids are harassing, but he doesn't get disturbed like that. So that's the Uttam, because they're all devotees like that. So then in here then that distinction is made. So this is something, it's not brought out strongly, but it's subtly underlined there so that one understands that the neophyte position is not considered ideal. It's not a strong position, right? Because Shuddha Bhakti is the platform, pure devotional service. Now, that mature pure devotional service, that's what we're trying to develop. But pure devotional service is like that, for us, is that place that we can function from, right? That's considered ideal.
So you're saying if someone's on the Madhyam platform, fall finding will stop? Or can they be on the stage of Nishta and sometimes...
It means it'll still be there, because the point is, this means you have Nishta. Nishta, like we mentioned, you'll have the Kanishta aspect, Kanishta Nishta, Madhyam Nishta, Uttam Nishta. So Kanishta Nishta, then, I mean, Kanishta Nishta. there'll be more of a tendency to do that. The Madhyama platform of it will be less. The Uttama platform, then that taste is starting to come, right? So you once starts to more seriously lose the interest.
So what's the correlation between coming to the second class platform, being able to honor the devotees properly, and the stage of Nishta? Because previously you said Nishta is the stage of Madhyam, and now here we're hearing that Madhyam means, okay, I know how to associate with devotees. So what's the...
It means you're stable in devotional service. So therefore, the interaction with devotees and all that is part of the devotional process, so you're able to do that.
So you're saying you won't do it well if you're not at the stage of Nishta? If you're a Narthana
Vritti? It means by the devotional qualification, you'll tend to only do it well at Madhyama. If you're a nice guy before you join, you'll still be a nice guy as a Kanista. But it'll be based on what is your inherent conditioning. That's why it says Prakrita Bhakta. Because it's they're devotees, right? But there's that element of the Prakrita element. So because of that, you don't call it Shuddha Bhakti. What bhakti they perform will be pure. But the problem is there's all these other elements that are mixed. You know, so it's prominent. So therefore, if they're a nice person, they'll remain a nice person. You know, because the point is in the general society, you only have to be able to know how to do the activities of nice. You don't actually have to be nice. You know, that's the thing. As long as that you say all the things, act all the things, you do all the considerations, then that's considered nice. And now and again, you have someone who's actually sincere, but that's rare. They write books or movies about guys like that. But that's not very often, right? You know, the Catholic Church recognizes them, you know, stuff like that. But otherwise, they just know how to be socially nice. So if you know that technique, you can do that, whether you're a devotee or not. But the point is if you don't know that, then as a neophyte, generally that more natural, you know, manifestation will come out, right? Because the anarthas are coming up, so there's so much pressures from all sides, the, you know, the devotional excellence and then the material distraction, that generally you tend to act as you are, you know? That's the difficulty. But then as you become purified, then now you're starting to act in a cultured way because of the devotional service. Right? So that's why you see if they're nice towards devotees consistently, and but at the same time there aren't these other material distractions, that's greatly reduced, then you know that niceness, that's inherent from bhakti. Right? But if all the other material things are there, but they know how to behave nicely, but then at times you see the other side. Then that's just, they culturally know how to behave. They're more mature socially. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because the point is you are where you're at. It's the mystical is that you can take something that's not very qualified and make it into something very qualified. It's not just mystical means it just kind of poof happens, right? Like that.
What about the fake it till you make it? Idea.
As long as you understand that what you're faking is actually worth faking because it's good, then great. Because this idea, oh, you're faking it, just be real, that's all nonsense. That's 100% nonsense, because where is real in the material world? Because they're saying, be real, be who you are. Are we this body? Are we this conditioning? So this is all just modern nonsense just because They've had a symptom, they can tell where you're at. So they're smart enough to tell that there's something underlying. But you should know that more to a degree to know, okay, he's doing that. Why is he doing that? So therefore, I can be more cultured. In other words, I can tell you're faking it, but I don't have the culture to actually roll with that. That's what that statement is. Because if they're more cultured, they know you're faking it, but they go along with it. That's cultured. Right, this so-called intellectual culture is, oh, you point it out. And the low-class guys, then they don't act like that, so if someone's acting like that, why are you acting like that? You know, it's like, yeah, right. You know, and then they just go on. You know, so this there's this idea that this somehow or another, this pseudo-intellectual culture actually is cultured. So that's why it's Prakrita, because they think it has a value. There's the devotional, there's the value. You don't have the devotional, so therefore act how you are low class. But if I act low class, then why I should behave with you nice? You know, why you should deal at all? You know what I'm saying? Because if it's all about yourself, then hey, let's go for it. So it's just, no, they want you to just the way they want. It's this very fine little balance that only these, you know, semi-educated, semi-cultured, democratic liberals can do. And they don't pull it off very good because none of them have any friends. Right? They have associates, but none of them have close friends. You have to go up or you have to go down to find friends. Right? And from their perspective, the low-class people, they actually have friends. People are willing to, you know, put out, go to jail for them, die for them. They have people like that. These guys don't have anybody like that. And the guys above them, then there's also some, you know. Now that's kind of like some of it's real fake and some of it's that, but it's good fake. They got all the money, right? You know, so at least for their fakeness, they got money. These other guys don't have anything, right, except for the little intellectualization, so. No? You know, so if we want to be real, let's be real. But that's the problem, is they don't actually want to be real. They only want to, that you behave like they do. In other words, if it's outside of my conditioning, it's not good. So they're just as narrow as anybody else, just that their little keyhole vision is a little pushed more to the left. But that's it. It's not any broader. They'll claim to be broader, but they're absolutely not broader at all. Like that. There are individuals who are, but generally they're not the ones that make the comment. They won't make that comment. They'll make the comment, if you say that about someone else, then they'll get on your case. Those are the broad-minded ones. Or broader. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's that's the thing about the it's so delicate. When you get up onto the pure devotional platform, then the culture is common. The goals, everything is common. Though there'll be uniqueness to the personality, but culturally they'll be very, very similar. But in the neophyte, then you're going to have as much difference in culture as is their backgrounds. You know, that's the difficulty.
What about sometimes, at least it appears, that someone is very elevated in devotional service, but they just don't know how to deal with people, because that's who they are. And it doesn't seem to change as they become.
But it's not necessarily a matter of nice, it's just they don't know they don't know niti, that's all. See, as if they're nice as people, but they don't know how to deal in a conversation to get something done in the way of management or administration, then that's just means that's their conditioning. Like that.
But one would think if they're advancing, that conditioning wouldn't be there anymore.
That's one of the biggest delusions our devotees in our movement have, starting with the top. I mean, every temple president is like steeped in that illusion. Absolutely, he has to be, because his idea is that I don't have to learn what are people's nature and engage them accordingly, because I can't do that, it's out of my realm. So I will just use the thing as we're not the body, so you can do anything. But he can't do anything. He can only sit there and tell people what to do. Right? He can't wash the pots, he can't do the deity worship, he can't clean the temple. And there's a good chance that he used to be able to distribute books 20 years ago. You know? So it's like, you know, he can't do those things. But he covers it by just saying that this. So it's a big flaw in the movement. This idea you can change your nature. Nowhere does it say you can't. That's Krishna's one of his first instructions in the second and third chapter of Gita. Is you're not going to change your nature. You can purify it. But some of the devotees come up, you have to change your nature, Prabhu. Because that's what the hippies say. That's what psychologists say. Like that.
How do you distinguish between conditioning and nature? Like what you can change and what you can't change.
You can purify. Conditioning and nature are the same thing. It's whether it's in a pure state or an impure state. You know, just like, take for example, you have a little kid, right? A little 8-year-old boy. And he's bold, right? So he sees you. He's never seen you before. He comes out, hi, my name's this. What's your name? That's bold. He just walked in. You've never seen him. You don't know him. He walked right up to you. Okay, but you don't mind because it's in a pure state. But the guy who, you know, the shark, he'll come up to you and bold, he'll come up and this and take you for a ride. You don't like that because it's impure. It's self-motivated. The other one's based on relationship. His is just based on getting done what he wants. So you can purify that. So the qualities aren't bad. Any quality, oh, he's too proud, he's too strong, he's too this, those aren't the problem. The problem is they're not pure. So they think we have to get rid of that quality. That's where basically you can say all the managers make the mistake. It's no, you have to purify that quality. That you can't get rid of that quality. You think you can get rid of that quality, then you know something that even God doesn't know. You know? It just doesn't exist. So you have to purify what's there. That's why the shastras give what are your duties, so that you actually know what's the proper way to engage your conditioning. You know? If you like to manage, then these are your rights, but these are your obligations.
What about what I was referring to? So okay, you have conditioning by your nature. But you got other stuff you just pick up because of your culture.
But still, you wouldn't pick it up if it wasn't connected with your conditioning. Because there's others in the same culture who don't become like that. Most do, some don't. You always have the oddball, right? You know what I'm saying? That's why you have the schlamazel, right? Right? It means the normal guy is normal. Then the little bit out of the way guy is a shlemiel, right? And if he's really out of it, he's a shlemazel. No? Yeah. So the thing is means in that group, they're all successful. The shlemazel is the farthest thing from the successful. But he's in the same group, but it just doesn't happen. So it's just like that. You'll always get. You know, people are happy to be in their place, and somebody who just doesn't fit in, they want to be somewhere else. Yeah. But it's the same association, but different nature. So to pick it up means there's something that's connected to the nature that you can do it. Now, whether you do it sincerely or you do it because, you know, you really identify with it, or you just do it because that's what you're supposed to do. That's two different things. The one is just you are committed to it. The other one, you're just smart.
Well, let's say someone has a nature where they can't figure out how to use it for Krishna. Say, my nature is I can't control myself. That's just how I am. I've always been that way.
No, but uncontrolled means, okay, but the uncontrolled aspect, that's just impurity. That's just the mode of ignorance, because you don't know what's what. Because uncontrolled means you can't tell the difference between what's to be done and what's not to be done. So that's just the mode of ignorance. So if one purifies, then one will start to be able to discriminate. Now, the element that you can't control, that you're very enthusiastic, you like to do things, you like to take risks. Now that's the worthwhile part, if we're dealing with some intelligence here. Because the person can see an opportunity, he's willing to take the risk, while others aren't willing to take the risk. So it has an element of leadership and stuff like that, or at least personal development. But you have to be able to distinguish what's just impurity and what's... So when you were saying nature and conditioning, what you want to say is what's conditioning and nature are the same thing. So what's nature and what's impurity? Like that, that's what has to be distinguished. Because that's the thing, is that person, let's say if you're having a party or you're having just a get-together, they're the fun one. Because they'll do all the things and come up with all kinds of things. So that means that they're spontaneous, they're dynamic, they're enthusiastic, they're willing to work, they're willing to take the risk. All those are good. Now, if they're engaged in Krishna's service, then it's nice. So the thing is if they find that it's uncontrollable, then focus nicely on their sadhana and stuff like that so that they purify. Be very careful of offenses, all these other things. So when that becomes purified, then they'll be quite dynamic. Like that. So that's the point, is that there's nothing, because it's all Krishna's qualities. All there are. It means you have the negative, means the lack of them. So that's not. That's why it says Krishna is the superior qualities. So that means light is superior, darkness is inferior. It's just the lack of light. You know, compassion is the superior. You know, miserly is the lack of that. So miserly is not actually a quality. It's a negative of it. So it's a quality, but it's the opposite. So Krishna is the superior qualities. So everything is rooted in the spirit, in the superior. It's just due to impurity you'll see the negative. So if that's purified, then those will naturally come into their normal state. So that's why any devotee, you know, if they're purified, then can do so many things. And to get any one thing done, you can do it in so many ways. That's why devotees can, you know, all variety of devotees can actually get the same thing done. They can all preach or run a temple or, you know, run a program or, you know, do different things, because there's so many ways to do any one thing. Right, so they'll take those qualities, and all those qualities are connected to Krishna. They are Krishna's qualities. You're trying to connect your situation to Krishna. Therefore, you can do it. So the positive can always be connected. The problem is one, the negative element. Right? But the negative simply indicates the opposite of the positive. So if you figure out what's the positive, that means that's the medium you're working with. You cultivate that. It'll work. It's not that, oh, you have this, there's no good qualities. No, if you have one side, that means the other's there. Like, you know, if you have temperature, you can have hot or cold. You know, you have smell, you can have good or bad. So now if the negative is being manifest, it means the positive is actually the actual nature. Just due to contamination, now it's functioning in the negative. Does that make sense?
So if we're using the word condition, we're just being under the modes of nature.
Yes, that's all. It means it's just the under the modes of nature according to your previous karma. Like that. So now you can change that, your, how you say it, you can purify what it means. Your body's not going to change. It's not because you took up chanting and you wake up in the morning and look in the mirror and you're Mr. Atlas or something like that. It's not going to happen, you know. So that stuff is not the element. It's a matter of you can purify what's there because there's no need to change. That's the illusion that you have to change it because we can't tell the difference between positive and negative qualities. And we don't understand that the negative is simply the other side of the positive, right? In other words, and the same thing is that, oh, you know, a good brahmachari is one who hates women. Right? No, it's technically called a misogynist. It's not called a good brahmachari, right? You know, but, you know, so there's this idea that if you hate something, then you're not attached to it. No, but if you hate something, that means you can love something. So in other words, women are a value, just whether you're looking at them in the positive or negative. That's all. So that makes a problem, so it comes into a problem there. So in the same way as if you're trying to engage devotees, you have to see, okay, what is the nature? What are the positive qualities? You know, but to do that, you have to be able to see positive qualities. And then, like we were discussing the other day, is that if you can see positive qualities, then you can see positive qualities in others. And then you have a tendency not to criticize. So here it's not a matter of criticizing, it's a matter of, okay, the weakness is in this. This category of quality is in its negative now. So the ones that are in the positive, definitely connect them immediately because that will create the purification for the others. But then in those areas they can be made aware, and if it's something they can do. If it's too early, then you leave it and just focus on the positive ones. But if they have more of a, you know, that element of anartha nivritti, there's maturity, they can look at it, then you point it out and show how, what's the negative, positive side of it. Right. In other words, the brahmachari has a problem with ladies. Then the thing is that if you don't need them, then you don't interact with them. So therefore, the only reason you'd interact is not because of your interest in them, or you would interact by not being interested in them. You would only interact if there's a duty. So if there's some service and some therefore natural interaction, you deal there and you deal according to etiquette. That's a brahmachari. Like that. Does that make sense? So you just identify what's there. Then it works.
Okay, let's say we're dealing with somebody who has difficulty listening.
Right.
And they're messing things up. Everybody's telling them they're messing things up. What do we do? How do we...
The point is that who's their authority?
They've got themselves in a position where... Some do, where they have authorities, but those authorities can't really do much because they're doing a lot of service, and if they push them too hard, the person will go, well, then I'll just leave.
So then just leave. If that's all you value, Krishna consciousness, is that it's all about you, and if it doesn't go the way you just leave, then hey, you know, why do we have to put up with that? You have authorities. If you don't listen to your authorities, no one's going to listen to you. So in the long run, your service isn't really going to come out to matter. Because you'll be doing big stuff, but it'll fall apart. You did the big festival, but there's no follow through, and then it all falls apart. And then next year we have to start from scratch again. So it's nice that big deal, that potential is there and everything, but do you want to please Krishna or it's all about yourself? You go away. Go away where? Krishna's everywhere. Where are you going to go away? You know, what is this go away? You're in illusion that you're in control of going away. You're free from the modes. You can do whatever you want. What is this go away? You know what I'm saying? Because the point is, you know, you don't like being told here what to do, but you go away and then see. Everybody will be telling you what to do. You can't work at a company in that and then not do what you want. They're going to tell you what to do. And if you want to go on the welfare of the dole, then fine, but how much do you have? Right? But even then, you have to stand in line, you know, because if you don't stand in line, the other guys aren't going to be nice. They'll punch your lights right out, you know, so they don't care. You know, they're not going to go away. That's the difference, you know. You step in front of them, you know, you're going away. Yeah. You like to be the one going away, you're going to go away, yeah. So it's just, you know, it's not an alternative. They make it sound like it's an alternative. They threaten as if, but what's their position to threaten? This is Krishna's movement, not theirs. So you want to go away, go away. You know, who's losing? You know, and the point is if you want to be that difficult, the rule of the Madhyam is to preach to those, you know, who are willing to take that compassionate element, not those who are opposed to it. So therefore, if there's no one else, then we'll preach to you. But otherwise, if there's other people who are more willing, we're going to come to them first. So don't complain after 10 years no one came and visited me. You know, because why should they? Why am I obliged to sit there and listen to, you know, 3 hours of nonsense you going on criticizing devotees? And then only after, if I'm willing to do that, then you're willing to be a little bit nice. You know? So that's why these things don't work. You know? So it's, hey, you can do that. But the point is Prabhupada said your love is shown by how you cooperate. Right? So you can do big stuff, great. But if you could cooperate, it could be bigger. You know? For the Rajasuya sacrifice, every one of the Pandavas, Krishna, Balaram, everybody who took responsibility, each one could be emperor of the world, no problem. Krishna only took care of the shoes. And you can say, well, it's only taking care of the shoes. You're taking care of the shoes of, you know, tens of thousands of kings of the world. And they're not coming alone. They're coming with their wives and assistants and ministers and generals and that. So there's a whole party coming. So you have tons of shoes, and that's of that one king. And you can't mess it up. Okay, here's all your shoes. You got to at least give the king his shoes. Everybody else can figure out theirs from the pile, right? So you can't lose that. And there's tens of thousands of kings. So that's attention to detail. That's management. Not, oh, I only sit in the room and do the big things. That's not management. You know? Nakula, all he did was, after the shoes have been deposited with Krishna, he ushers them inside. That's all he does. Then, when he gets it, so he has to know how to talk with each king and this and why this and that. So that means he has to know about every one of those kings. What their background, what they've done, something special, something unique, what makes their dynasty stand out. That's what history is. In the Veda, that's what modern history means, to know everybody and know what's unique about them so you could actually talk to them. You know? Then they get inside, then Sahadev personally sits them all. Now you have to know each king, the one you have to know how to, you know, butter them up, but this one you have to know who's allies with who, who's senior to who. Because if you put two enemies together or somebody, you know, who's senior and puts a junior in front of them, especially if they're enemies, you got war right there. Right? So we're thinking, Rajasuya, everyone just walks in and it's all happy and nice and all that. There's no arrangement, you know, like that. No, it's not like how we do it. You know? It's very exact. That's the difference, what it's meaning about a festival that is, you know, everybody's invited, and one that's open to everybody. There's a difference, because one where everybody's invited, that means you're arranging to see that each and every one is properly taken care of. The one that's open means it's just everybody can come, you know, so the arrangements will be minimum. Manu says a Brahmin should never go to an open invitation. It just doesn't. Better to fast than go to an open invitation. Because when you go there, you won't be taken care of properly. You'll be feeling bad, and that they don't take care of the devotees nicely, then Krishna's not going to be happy. So it just seems like, oh, we're feeding all the devotees, so therefore we're getting the best benefit. That's only if you feed them nicely. Nicely means with attention. So these are the cultural rules. And these are right there. That's Mahabharata. Everybody knows the story. You know? Very few know the one about, you know, Brahmins shouldn't go to such programs. That one they don't know. That's Manu. But Manu's for leaders, right? So only leaders should read it. Right? Is that okay? So there's a lot there. That the problem is we know the basic philosophy, but we don't know the culture. But the point is the philosophy is applied as the culture. And so, therefore, if we accept the philosophy, we reject the culture, where's the expression? You know, it's like saying, well, I really love this girl and all that, but, you know, I'm not into flowers, I'm not into cards, I'm not into going out to the movies, I'm not into all these things, and forget rings, you know, those are expensive. You know, long drives, long walks on the beach, you know, like this. What's left? Oh, why do we have to do all that old traditional stuff? She knows, like that. It says, it doesn't work. So it's not working in the modern culture, And so if you bring that same conditioning into Krishna consciousness, it's not going to work either. So the point is that's why the culture is there. That's why Lord Chaitanya says you have to learn the etiquette. And without the etiquette, you don't go back to Godhead. It's pretty straightforward. So it's just, that's what you do. You have to learn this. It's just human relations. So Manu gives them all in a very technical, this is it, these are the duties, and if you do them, it'll work. You know, but there's the natural spot. You want to do that because of the affection and that for the devotees. But those are the forms. You know?
So, in a situation, which is very common, you go somewhere and someone says, "Can I talk to you? We have problems getting along." Everywhere I go, somebody.
Problem with you or problem with
no,
someone
problem
else?
Problem with leadership.
Oh, okay, yeah. I always have the one is you can't tell if the problem's with you or not, you know. I've been wanting you to say for a long time and this and that and hasn't told anybody and going and, you know, we were back, you know, and then you're waiting for it. Okay, what is he going to, you know, say? And then you find out it's someone else. But sometimes you don't find out it's someone else. It is you.
I had this. You find out from your wife.
Huh? Oh yeah, okay, yeah, okay. Yeah, I had one lady who was like, I forget what it was, 15 years or 25 years or something. She was always feeling bad because she and her husband were asked to leave Vrindavan, and Padmalochan and I, we were brahmacharis there, and we were told to go check if they were packing. You know? So, you know, they're in their room and we're out on the veranda, but, you know, a bunch of idiot brahmacharis. So we're there talking, laughing, and we go up there and, you know, we check, okay, we're still talking and laughing, and then we walk off. So the lady thought we were laughing that she had to leave Vrindavan. Well, we were just a bunch of idiot brahmacharis just joking and laughing. You know, anything that moves, you can laugh about it, right? You know? You know, so it had nothing to do with them at all. And so then, you know, but whatever it was, 20 years later, then she brought it up, and then I mentioned what was going on, and then everybody was happy, right?
Better late than never.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's pretty common. So, in these situations, what are we understanding? Is this...
Is this Kanishta, or is this just something else? It doesn't matter, because the point is bothering them, but the point you're dealing with is what are the principles. Because unless you really know them to deal with directly with their conditioning, then it might not work out. Then you're just another one on the list. Right? You know, so then the thing is what principles are at work here? Because there's the element of authority, there's the element of duties, obligations, responsibilities. At the same time, there's rights and stuff like that. But the point is if it's not working out, then there's also, you have your rights, but then there's karma. Even though you should get your rights, you're not. Why not? Because in previous, you know, some situations, someone else should have gotten their rights, and you made very well sure they didn't get them. You know, so therefore it comes around, you know. So all these things you can bring out so that the point is they can make the decision that how to be... In other words, despite whatever arrangement is there, you can be Krishna conscious. That's the ultimate point. This idea, well, I can't be Krishna conscious as long as this one or that one or this is happening or that. You can be Krishna conscious despite. Right? You know, you can't say that when it comes to justice that anything worse happened to anybody else than Yudhishthira. And he was still Krishna conscious. Right? It wasn't like, how did you allow this to happen, Krishna? You know, this or that. No. Draupadi may have said that, but he never said that. You know. So, in other words, Yudhishthira never says it because he does what's natural, what is the ideal, right? He's the, what do you call it? Dhira Prashanta, example of the perfect, you know, example of a devotee in behavior in all situations. You know, he's the emperor of the world, he's peaceful. He's out in the forest, he's peaceful. There's no change, right? At the same time, so that's what we should be. And Draupadi says all the things of what, you know, we would want to say, you know, where we are, you know. So that way then you get both. So how both are dealt with, you know, what's the response and all that. So you get all. Does that make sense? I generally, if that comes up, never deal with the actual issue. Because the point is, this is not the real, that's the issue. Because their conditioning, that's the issue. So for someone else, that's not the issue. And someone else would be something different. You know, like that. You know, so it's a matter of what are the principles, devotional principles at work here that are involved in what's your connection and how you can be Krishna conscious despite it. Because if you can't change the situation, then there's nothing you can do about it. So why complain about it? Just be Krishna conscious in it. Right? If you're in a position to change it, then that's another thing. Right? And then if you're in a position to change those who could change the situation, then you get involved. If you're not, don't worry about it.
Seems like there's this phenomena that certain people end up managing temples who nobody likes. It's like, not everywhere. But
no, because no one else wants to do it. Because it's a lot of risk. So that someone's willing to take that responsibility, it's very special, because there's a huge amount of risk. I mean, the person's overburdened just managing his own house. Now you're managing a house that everybody's in, and they all have their problems and everything like that. You know, so you think two kids are a problem. What about, you know, 50? You know, so it's just something is that people aren't willing to do it. So therefore, it should be that management has its position, has its independence, has that, but it still has to function under authority. So there has to be that leaning towards the positive, rather than just, well, is there anybody who wants to do it? You know, kind of that kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, you can see if you look at it, it's not a matter of the philosophy, it's a matter of understanding it more, but it's the cultural application that is necessary. That's where the lack is. So all these years of ignoring that or avoiding that, then now the result is there. Because someone only goes on that fresh enthusiasm for a certain amount of time, but the idea is that in that time they should be then situated in how to properly behave and act and all the culture and what are all the rules, so that when that enthusiasm comes to its kind of like balance, then now they fit into the culture, rather than when that goes, then like that. So the importance of the Vedic culture has been underestimated to a, you know, sad degree. And this is the results. And you see, those that put emphasis on the culture, their yatra flourishes. And those who don't, it doesn't. It's that it's simple. There are ones that do value the culture and the whole thing, and they work nice. You know? Point is, you value Vaishnavas, you value Guru, you value Harinam, you value, you know, that pure devotional service, your yatra will flourish. Simple as that. And even any one of them will make it flourish, let alone if you have, you know, so many. But if you ignore these, then it doesn't matter how expert manage, what book, what this, what plan, it will not be successful. It can't be, because it's devotional service. It's not the material world. Because if it's the material world, it's going to be your karma. But your karma doesn't have any effect in devotional service. You know, so you see, you know, young guys, inexperienced guys do amazing things that even a seasoned professional would find hard to do. And you see seasoned professionals unable to do the simplest thing. It's simply whether there's faith in Krishna or whether you have faith in your own ability. Like that. You know, you have to have confidence to take part, but the point is it's not our ability, it's Krishna's. Is that okay? Yes.
The nature is not the problem, it's the impurity.
Yes.
So by associating the sattva gun, you don't necessarily change, like, your vaishya.
You don't change it, you're just a good vaishya.
Yeah. So when Prabhupada said, this society is especially meant to create Brahmins, is it the internal consciousness of...
It means you have both. You have the Brahminical as culture. So you have Brahman by occupation. That's one thing. Someone who has the Brahminical occupational nature can do that. Someone who doesn't can't. means everybody can offer an artik because they're doing that as ashram. I'm a devotee, I worship the deity. That's ashram. But as an occupation, there's very few. How many full-time pujaris that have been doing it for some time are there in the movement? So that means that's all that are pujaris by nature, at least that are purified enough to do it. There may be more, but they're not purified enough. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So all these different things. You have book distributors. They're still distributing books 20, 30 years later, right? All the Vaishyas stopped distributing books, you know, after 3-4 years. But the Brahmins, they're still distributing books. Does that make sense? You know, because how much profit you make off of that? Right? You know, how much praise you get. Every morning they say the same thing, the same drum, the same kartal. You know, after a while it gets old. So then, you know, now what? You know? So it dies out because of the mode of ignorance. So that's one thing. But on the ashram side, so therefore everybody is Brahman by ashram. Because there is no other ashram in the Brahminical thing. There's only the Brahminical system. Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. That's Brahminical. Now how much of that you can do, that's another thing. That may be according to your purity. But the point is there is only one culture, the Brahminical culture. There isn't another culture. In occupation, there's four. But in ashram, there's only one. It means it has four divisions, but it, you know, so that way it balances with the other. So the two work together. But everybody's Brahman by realization, understanding, you know, social behavior, all these different kinds of things. But only a few are Brahman by occupation. So when we say this society is for creating Brahmins, then in general that means Brahminical society. Everybody has the Brahminical mentality that they're interested in Brahman, in transcendence. At the same time is, by doing that, then you can create a class of Brahmins by occupation, who can give direction and everything like that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Can you have 50% Brahman, 50% Vaishya, the same?
He's in the same person. It's called Varna Shankar.
But it seems like there's a lot of these guys.
No, not a lot. We're called mixes of mixes. In India, you have straight, upfront Brahman. They're Brahmins. Their parents are Brahmins. They can tell you the names of 7 generations, right? But that's pure genes, you know. You know, I don't mean like, you know, Calvin Klein or anything. I mean pure genes, right? You know? I think we were in Hungary or someplace. Going along this, you know, you have these huge trucks and they have sometimes advertisements on the side. And it had this, you know, one of these, you know, top models wearing jeans. And the sign said, good genes. No, it's just a matter of, that's why it's, you look at it, okay, what's the nature of the mother, what's the nature of the father, does that mix create something in specific? It means if it's Anuloma, 1 degree, it'll be one, with a little bit of the mood of the other. But it'll have the nature of one, the mood of the other. The boy, it'll be the nature of the mother, the mood of the father. So then that's there. If it's 2 degrees, then you get something new. So then you just have to know what are those mixes, what's the nature and what's the inspiration. And so then know how to work with those two. If it's pratiloma, then even 1 degree will give a different nature. Like that. So then one is very careful about that. But the point is because the culture is Brahminical, everybody can come to that. So it's only a matter of an occupation where you find that it works nicely. Like that. You know, it's just like I remember one. His father was doing business, his mother was the head pujari, right? And so for him, perfection was going on, you know, traveling with these big, you know, preaching parties, you know, like, what is that thing of America?
Rock,
yeah, But that whole, what, doesn't it have a name for that? Festival of America. Festival of India. So he loved to go traveling at Festival of India, but before we go, he got a whole suitcase full of saris, so when he goes there, he could sell them and make his money. So, he could, so that way, he loved to be involved in Brahminical things because of the mother's nature, same time as there was that slight little, you know, hey, you know. So that way he could maintain it on the side. So that way he worked it out. You know. So you just have to know what's there. This whole thing, oh, it doesn't matter. That's why things don't work. There's no sustainability. You can sustain what is your nature. You can't sustain what's not your nature.
Okay, so let's say, like in my situation, 8 months after I joined, I was the temple president. I've been temple president 4 times.
Okay.
I managed Sankirtan. But basically what I was doing, either managing Sankirtan or managing temple, some book distribution, but I hated it. But I knew it wasn't my nature, and I used to dream about teaching. When can I go and to Mayapur and just teach? And it was like, you know, 1975, I'm dreaming. But the pressure, you know, there's mm-hmm. pressure, you know.
The social pressure.
Yeah, so how does the devotee deal with, like, you know, here's, I mean, I went to the temple, the whole place was falling apart, I was just visiting, I ended up having to take it, like, if you don't take this temple over, it's finished. How do we deal with this? How should a devotee say, no, it's not my nature, I'm not going
to
do it?
But then he has to be very clear about that. He also has to be very clear and also know what the spectrum is. Because if one's dealing there is, okay, teaching. So, but the point is, Prabhupada says one can learn anything, teach anything. So in other words, you could combine, I'm just throwing things out, you could combine if you really know that teaching is the nature, but one is able to function in that realm of relate to management, but doesn't like to do management, that means you could teach management. That means you could learn and teach management. So then, one would be the temple president, but teaching everybody else who has managerial ability how to do it, and let them run the temple, and then you just sit there and see that they were running it according to standards. So then you teach, and then you could start the Bhakti Shastri classes. You know, so everyone learns the philosophy. You can, you know, teach the nectar devotion. They learn the etiquette and culture. You see the standards of cleanliness and all those things, because that's what the Brahminical is there for. So then it's just a matter of the Brahman can do anything, but as long as it's from that Brahminical platform, you know. So then, and at the same time, one will have one's areas of more interest, you know.
Well, it almost sounds like what you're saying is Brahman should be the president, because if he's not, then you're going to just get...
No, you can have a Kshatriya as the president as long as he has Brahmins to advise him, or a Vaishya can be president as long as he has Brahmins to advise him, you know. Like that. As it gets bigger, the Vaishya will have more difficulty being a president. The Kshatriya won't. Like that. The Brahmin, if he doesn't have the managerial abilities and his area is not management, then he'll have problems. So he has to have others who are. So in other words, the manager would have to have a Brahmin, and the Brahmin would have to have a manager. These two Manu mentions, they're basically non-different. Brahmins and Kshatriyas are basically the same thing, just two sides of the same thing. Because both of them are dependent upon Shastra, that it has to be according to Shastra, it has to be according to tradition. And so then it's just a matter of one teaches that, one applies it. Right? So because society requires that, the Brahmins require the Kshatriyas, otherwise it doesn't get established in society. And the Kshatriyas require the Brahmins because they know how to do it, but they still need direction, because when you're involved, you don't sometimes see the bigger picture. You don't see the theory at work. So the two go together. So if these things are understood, it can be easily developed. Like that. But it takes knowledge. It takes understanding. But there has to be a willingness that this actually does work. Because you could say, is this other method that they're trying to use now, the more modern kind of things, they've been doing that since the mid-90s, by determination, right? By inclination, since earlier, but determination there. So that's been, you know, 17 years, you know. And so if it's not really working great, then maybe what Prabhupada was talking about, what might work. You know what I'm saying? Because it works in India. You have these huge ashrams. They have a manager and they have a sadhu. So this idea of the GBC temple president kind of concept, that works on all levels. Right? It means you have the GBC temple president. Within the temple, then you have the president, and you have someone who gives advice and direct that he trusts. I mean, it's not just anybody, and they don't control.
So are the GBC Brahmins or Kshatriyas?
That means, by definition, by the tradition, they're Brahmins. If they think they're Kshatriyas, then Kshatriyas... In 8 years, Chandragupta went from having nothing to being in control of the empire. Right? There was another king of Mithila. His father was killed in a battle. His mother was pregnant with him at the time. She escaped. You know, when all the people were fleeing, she just dressed up as a maidservant, escaped, ended up somewhere else. Her son grew up. And when he grew up, then he knew who he was, so he wanted to, figure out how to do. So immediately he's thinking, how to get money, and therefore I'll raise an army, and then I'll do that. That's the first thing he thinks, as soon as he understands what his nature is. Otherwise, because he grew up in a Brahmin family. So he thought he was a Brahmin. When he understood this, then he, like that. So his mother brought ornaments with her, right? Lots of gold and all that. So he said, okay, here's the money. So here's the gold, take all this. He said, no, I'll only take half. Right, because Kshatriya means protection. So you keep the other half in case something goes wrong, but I'll take this half. Right? He went off and all that. And then he got on a boat. He was going to go somewhere to take that money, invest it, make more money, and then raise an army. So he would do business. He knows that technically it only for administrative purpose, not as something... That's not the profit. The profit is the army, not the money. So, but then the ship wrecked. He ended up washed on shore. And then in the kingdom, that king who had killed his father died. And there was no heir. He only had a daughter. And so he left it up to whoever the daughter wants to marry will become the king. So then, but he to make sure that she had qualification, he gave different things that he had to do. There were, I think, I forget what it was, like three different tasks he had to accomplish. And that. So then, at the end, they didn't know. Everybody tried to do, all the ministers, all the generals, no one could do it. So then they sent the horse out. Because sometimes they do that, the royal elephant or the royal horse. So sometimes they go out and they find the person. You know, it's just one of those things, a nimitta. Of the astrological thing. So he sent it out and it went up to this, kid who was just sleeping. You know, so the whole, all the general ministers are all there. And so then they come and they say, okay, well, he's asleep. So then they said, okay, we should wake him up. So they decide to, play drums and horns and then make a lot of noise, see what he does. So it all goes off. He just kind of lays there. It's kind of like, what's this, He just kind of opens his eyes, looks around. Because he's just laying there. They came along, And then he just closed his eyes and went back to sleep. So they thought, the prime minister, he understood, okay, so this means, we've come here, we owe him an explanation, not that he should wake up what's happening, right? So then he goes over and he wakes him up and then explains to him everything. So then they go back. And then he's presented with the tasks by the daughter, right? She has a square bed. He has to figure out which is the head. Where's the head of the bed? It's perfectly square. It's made up. There's just a mattress. There's no pillows, no nothing on it. Where's the head of the bed? So he asks her, where do you keep the pins from your hair? She said, on this side. So he said, that's the head. Because you're going to lay down there, you're going to take them out, you're going to stick them there. You're not going to put them over here and walk over there. Girls don't do that. Right? So like this, and he worked out all the different things. And another one is that he had all these pots of gold, and they were placed in different places. 16 pots of gold. Big pots, not little ones. And so then the first question was, is the first pot is where the sun rises on the kingdom. Where the sun rises, where it sets. So then, then they all thought, well, that would be because it's in the east, so the eastern gate. He said, no, because it can't be so. It can't be like that. Because he said, did the father, what was his relationship with Brahmins?
And so they said that, you know, he always had them come over, invite them, would always take care of them, listen to her advice. So he said, okay, what gate is the gate he would greet the Brahmins at? Right. So then they showed him that one. So he said, dig here. So they found the first path. Right? Where does the sun set? That's the one they go out of. Like that. So then in this way, he gained all the pots. Right? And he was just a kid who had grown up not knowing anything. Right? And then he's told who he is. Immediately he has plans how to raise an army and get back his kingdom. When that's all lost, he still does it by his proper Kshatriya qualities. That's a Kshatriya. If you haven't done it 17 years, you're not a Kshatriya. That's it. If you haven't done something dynamic in 6 months, you're not a Kshatriya. Right? If I give 10,000 rupees to a Vaishya today, come back in a few weeks, he'll have a lot of money. You give it to anyone else, you'll have nothing. So it's easy. Right? Does the guy know how to cook? A cook? No, you can go into the kitchen, cook. Guy doesn't know how to cook, it doesn't matter. He can't cook.
So let's say you take someone...
You know what I'm saying? But because it's a devotional society, therefore, if you follow simply that simple program, see that everybody's engaged in that simple program from the platform of Bhagavat, from preaching, and that compassion, you can still run the temple. You may not be any good at the administration, but that's why you see the original temple. They had none. There was nothing. There was just, you know, the only furniture in the temple was the altar and Prabhupada's Vyasa song, you know? And that was it. You know, so it was easy enough to manage. So therefore, anybody could do it. But if you're going to complicate things and make it bigger, then you have to have a Kshatriya there. Or you can do a Vaishya on a middle size.
So the mistake is to think you can do it when you can't, and then you don't get the right people to help you.
Yes, like that. But it doesn't mean that anybody can't do it from that devotional standpoint, but then it has to be very well situated in there. Everybody's chanting, everybody, because then everybody will follow their nature. It will be purified. Everyone will naturally do all the duties in the temple. But then, so you're just providing that facility. So anybody can do that. But then that makes great determination. It has to be there to be able to function just on that devotional platform. So that means it's foolproof. It can work either way. It'll be much simpler. You can make it much bigger if it's there. But even the other person, he's a very good devotee. So anybody comes up, has an ability, then he just sees that they're doing nicely. He's not worried they're going to take his position. Right? Or he's not worried to give them freedom because they're using it nicely. It is the nature. Like that. So it can work, even just from the direct devotional, but then it has to be directly devotional. You can't say, we're not going to worry about that, we're being practical, and at the same time not have that practical ability. Like that. So it's a problem. But easily solved. That's the point. All these things can be easily solved. But the main thing is understanding. Is education. So it means Prabhupada said all the temples are supposed to be educational institutions. So then there shouldn't actually be any problem being involved in the temple. Because they're supposed to be educational institutions. But generally it's seen that that's not practical. Because they don't understand, even though this is the fun part. So much faith is there in modern education, but to make the temple into an educational institution, well, that's not practical. You know, because it takes away from other things.
That's also, it seems if you have too much of a Kshatriya spirit, then your education will simply be to get people to do something.
But that's why you have Brahmins. They'll do the education. You just see that it's going on. Provide the facility.
If you're Kshatriya, you're not detached. You won't like what the Brahmins are saying.
But then you're a low-class Kshatriya. So, of course, you're going to get a low-class result. Right? In other words, you have a very well-managed temple where everybody does what they're supposed to, but it's very sterile. The Vaishya will have the temple. It'll have lots of facilities, look really good, but it'll be sterile. The Brahmin will have it. It'll be very enthusiastic and everything like that, but a good chance managerially, a nightmare. Like that. So that's the point, is there has to be the cooperation. That's why the Vedic culture is there. The Vedic culture tells who does what. So that's the whole thing, is that you have, and the problem comes is you have the obvious, and then you have the subtlety. In the subtlety, then you have these overlaps. One thing can be defined in two ways, right? It means the husband is in the masculine position, the wife's in the feminine. But when it comes to the children, both are in the masculine position, the child's in the feminine. So that means the wife is both in the, she's in the feminine position to the husband, but the masculine position to the son. So these are that second stage, that's where generally it starts to become a problem. Because it's, okay, these are all the duties, you know. But the point is then when it switches position, then it's there. Like the GBC is supposed to see that the temple president is running nicely. He's the manager, not the GBC. See, the ultimate managerial authority means who's the authority of the managers, not who's the top manager. That's a Western theory. Lord Brahma does not manage the universe. Indra does. But Brahma is his authority. Brihaspati is authority. Bhrigu is his authority. So that means the point is you have to understand the culture. Since you drop from philosophy into the culture, you have to know what culture is. So highest managerial authority means the highest authority of management. Not the highest managers, the highest authority of management. Right? And the highest authorities of management have to have some, be able to relate to management itself. Otherwise, how they're going to be able to see that it's going on. Right? So the temple president is therefore there in that position of the kshatriya. But then within the temple, Then the temple president is seeing that all his department heads are doing. So when it comes to the department, he's like the GBC, and the department head is the manager. But if he wants to manage everything, then good luck. No good manager does that. You know. So that's where they have to be able to see, is that each stage it changes. You know, and the department head, he's supposed to be seeing that all his people in his department are doing what they're supposed to do. So like that, then it works. So that double role. That's why if you can't be a follower, you can't be a leader. So that person who can't respect authority or follow authority is not going to be an authority. You know, they can do it for 6 months, but then after that it falls apart. Maximum 3 years if you're in the West. Things move slower. Over here it moves too fast.
In the West there's no one else to do it. So.
Yeah, but just the modes of nature, everything moves real slow over there. You know, things don't change very quickly. Well, here you notice every day it's different. It's just, it's different. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we got 10 minutes. Yeah. Right? Huh. Okay. Well, the big hand's not far off. The big hand's where the little hand should be where the big hand is.
Magish is on the case.
Okay.
Or is you sabotaged it so you keep listening to you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But then if it's 1:30, we're supposed to stop. 1:20. Should have said it at 8:20, then it would just always, and then for the next class, put it at, you know, the next time. The word Shraddha is used here, the word Shraddha as used here actually means Shraddha Abbas, because Shraddha in worshipping the deity of Sri Krishna without simultaneous worship of Krishna's Bhakta is but an Abbas of real Shraddha, certainly not Shraddha proper. Right? So now he's saying Bhakti Abbas, Bhava Abbas, Nama Abbas, Vaishnava Abbas. So basically he's pointing out is if you're on the Abbas platform, it's all Abbas. And when you get to Shuddha, it's all real. Right? So therefore, even his Shraddha that we talk about, that's why it was mentioned before, is that Shraddha is a manifestation of Bhava, right? Mm. So the point is but it's not mature, right? So when it's mature, then it comes to Nishtha, then it becomes actual Shraddha, right? Because then it's pure devotion. Right, because he's worshiping Krishna, but not the devotees. But for Krishna, the devotees are important. So if you actually value Krishna, you'll value the devotees.
So right? Can we say that Abhas is actually a platform you could describe someone as?
Abhas means for us, we're talking about Chaya Abhas, because Pratibimba has been thrown out. That's a reflection. It looks like it, but it actually has nothing to do with it. But the Chaya Abhas means it's shadow, means it's connected. But it's just not the full form. It's only the silhouette of the actual thing. But it's the real thing, but only the silhouette. While the reflection is not actually, it looks like it, but it's not actually. You know, it's like your reflection in the mirror is not actually you. Right? You know, so like that. So this Abhas means it's just not very, it's real, but it's not very fully manifest. It's not so mature. So that's why, because it's real, that's why the neophyte advances. Because it is real. Otherwise, how would he advance to Madhya? Because if bhakti can only come from bhakti, that means there has to be some bhakti there. That potency of the bhava is there. Right? The potency of the name is there. So even in Abhas, one can go. Because you're talking about something that's real is, you know, even no matter how small it is unlimitedly greater than something that's illusory. You know? The simplest activity still has more substance than the most elaborate dream. So that's the point, is that even though it's there, that's why they have these both points, is that you have to respect the position of the neophyte, because he is a devotee, he has faith, he's chanting, he's doing all these things. But because pure devotion is the standard, it's not quite there, it's preliminary. Yes.
How do we deal with these Kanista devotees who, it just seems like they're just not advancing? They've been around for years.
But you just see that they're involved. Whatever is their degree of inspiration and involvement, just see that that continues. In other words, one doesn't give up. It's just see that it's there. You know, see that they understand the things. See that the classes are mentioning stuff, you know, about that. So in other words, if the class only exclusively ends in either something to do with management or book distribution, then it's good, it's nice arrangements and the best activity, but the personal development of how you're doing these things is not discussed. Does that make sense? So they should know what's there, how to. You know, it's just like if we understand it's simply desire by which then you get pure devotion, then we start having that desire. We think it's, no, when my sadhana is really good, it will get... No, it's by having that desire, then it naturally progresses. You're performing the activity, but if you don't have the desire, to be slower. But if you have the desire, even the sadhana is not so great, it's still, the one will progress quickly.
It just seems sometimes that all these things are said in Bhagavatam class, and everybody's nodding and agreeing, and then people go out and say prasad and go.
Was that a pun, the nodding? And
no, it wasn't, but I see what you're... Yeah, that's actually a good one.
See, everybody's nodding, they all agree.
Yeah. At least they're not disagreeing.
Yeah, okay.
But then they go about their day, and I mean, the
application. But the point is it's just a matter of building up. That's why it's saying that devotional service over so many lifetimes. It's when it develops, builds up to a certain intensity, then it becomes very dynamic. But the point is in one lifetime you can go back to Godhead. So it can be done. So if one understands that, then one makes that effort. But make the facility available for everybody, and then people will take it at their own speed. You know, you make prasad available, everyone eats according to their capacity.
A little above.
Well, if it's devotional service, then great. Then a little above is better. But you know, but you can't do that regularly, like that. At least over a sustained amount of time. In other words, we'll come back in 50 years and see if there's still that, you know, bucket of halva is still the standard breakfast. You know. Yeah, no, we've had to make some major changes in that, you know. Oh, you've had to reduce, you mean you had to stop eating halva? No, we still eat the same, you know, the halva. So you had to reduce how much halva? No, we still eat the same amount of halva. So what's the difference? well, now we can only eat halva when it's still hot. We can't eat the cold halva. That's, you know, that's for the kids. You know? Like that. See, the change is there. The change is there. Okay. Give one scope how one can eat halva for the next 50 years. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Therefore, this Shraddha Bhas is either a chaya or pratibimba of real Shraddha, being cultivated merely as a part of a custom or tradition. This level of Shraddha is not a Prakriti Shraddha, transcendental faith. Right? So he's saying here, being cultivated is merely custom or tradition, like you see in the Samartha families. They will do all the activities of devotion if they're Vaishnavas, like that. But it's not actually because they have faith in the thing. They have faith that by doing this ritual, then I'll get what I want. Right, what they want is not pure devotion. Right? Mm. So it's not forming a part of Ananya Bhakti. The definition of Vaishnava Bhas is focused upon a person whose Shraddha and worship are Prakriti, mundane, and who is therefore called a Prakriti Bhakta. Because there's the mundane considerations, you know, of all the different things. You can do this, you can't do this situation, that situation, all these different things. So, right? Vijaya, should Mayavadis, if they wear Tulsi neck beads, Tilak, and chant Harinam, be seen as Vaishnava Abbas?
Didn't you miss one paragraph?
Oh, okay. Oh, I see, they both start with an S. Okay. Sri Chaitanya designated Hiranya and Govardhan Majumdar, the uncle and father of Srila Raghunathas Goswami, as Vaishnava Praya, almost Vaishnavas. This indicates that such persons decorate themselves with Tulsi neck beads and tilak, etc., like true Vaishnavas, but their chanting is on the Namabhas stage. Thus, they are not actually pure Vaishnavas. Right? As here we're saying, standard is pure Vaishnava. So therefore, it's not quite. Right? But the point is the not quite is who turns into Vaishnavas, you know, the true Vaishnavas. So it's not, oh, we're not real Vaishnavas, so give it up. No, because the karmis never turn into pure Vaishnavas, right? It's the neophytes who turn into pure Vaishnavas. Right? Hiranya Govardhan Majumdar, uncle of Raghu. So they were too worried about, you know, the money, the family things, and getting married, all these things, which are, you know, natural part of their family life, but it became much more of a prominence, like that. You know, putting guards on him, you know, everything like that to make sure he doesn't sneak off and all that. Yeah. Okay, so about Mayavadis, if they wear neck beads, tilak, and chant Hari Nam, so are they seen as Vaishnava Bhas? Raghunathas Bhas. That doesn't work. That No, they are certainly not even Vaishnava Bhas. They are offenders, hence they are known as Vaishnava Aparadis. Right? Because possibly the chanting is at best Pratibimba Nama Bhas. And so generally they may be viewed as on the platform of Pratibimba Bhava Abhas. In this way, they may be called Vaishnava Bhas, but actually they should not be so designated since they are terrible aparadis. Means you could, from the one say, well, they are kind of devotees, they are doing this, but they are devotees as this Pratibimba Bhava Abhas. They're not actually looking for pure devotion, because they're looking for mukti. They do not deserve the honorable name Vaishnava in any respect. They are to be categorized separately. So we can see here is that the activities being the same as the devotees is not good enough. Mm. Right? Like that. It's not this. It's like, okay, you know, they're vegetarians, so therefore then they're like devotees. Mm. No, it's a matter of, because they're vegetarian, then from that aspect we'd be able to preach. But it's not that there's some similarity, because we're vegetarian, they're vegetarian, so we're all vegetarian, so it's all nice, you know? No, there's different categories.
It's all about intent.
Yeah, it's all about intent. Vijay, Gurudev, please tell us more about Shraddhanam and his symptoms. Raghunath Das Babaji. When Harinam is chanted with a favorable attitude devoid of mundane hankering and desire for jnana and karma, and thus only for the purpose of Shuddha Bhakti, then Shuddha Nam is being uttered. A favorable attitude devoid of mundane hankering. Okay. The desire to invoke the Achintya Shakti,
of Shuddha Nam and experience supreme transcendental bliss is not a mundane and motivated desire, but a pure desire within the realm of Shuddha Bhakti, known as Anyabhilashita Shunya Bhakti, devotion free from mundane hankering. Besides this, why he's pointing that out is because if you're hankering for a taste for the holy name to be situated in pure devotion, that you can see that's a hankering. You know, just like you taste prasad, and because you taste it, you thought it was nice, that's sense gratification. Some may say they're making a mistake there. They can't tell the difference between transcendental engagement of the senses and mundane engagement of the senses. So in the same way here, hankering, if it's for the spiritual, to have that taste and for the pure name, that's not mundane hankering. So pure chanting is free from mundane hankering. While you're chanting, then you're wanting so many other things. Mm. Besides the spiritual desire to attain pure transcendental love, all other desires concerning the results of chanting, such as the absolution of papa and the attainment of mukti, are anyabhilashita, extraneous desires for things unrelated to pure bhakti. So it's outside, right? So anyabhilash sunya means without any anyabhilash. So, yeah, I think bilash means desire. So anya means other. Okay, so as long as anyabhilash remains within the heart, Shuddha Nam does not manifest. The sadhaka lacks Shuddha Nam as long as he craves for the external rewards gained from the practice of karma, jnana, and astanga yoga. The heart must be cleansed of these detrimental non-devotional motives, and devotional qualities favorable to the achievement of Shuddha Nam must be cultivated. Okay, so here's... So it must be cleansed of the non-devotional motives, and devotional qualities favorable to the achievement of Shuddha Bhakti must be cultivated. So in other words, one's engaged in the one and one learns about the other. Right? Because just to become freed from sin and be purified, that's still considered anyabhilash. Because the point is it's outside of pure love for Krishna. To be freed from sins is still different from developing love for Krishna. Right? So one wants to develop love for Krishna, taste for the holy name. But what gets in the way of that is the other desires. So that's the only reason that they're mentioned, so that one would be careful of not being absorbed in them. Right? Does that make sense? But the goal is not to get rid of them. The goal is to develop love for Krishna. They'll automatically go away if that's the position. Yes.
It's using the word Shuddha Nam. So generally, understanding Shuddha Nam is chant Shuddha Nam, you're on frame or you're getting frame.
No, it just means pure chanting. But see, there's pure. Pure means the transcendental platform. Then there's the bhava stage of pure chanting, and there's the prema stage of pure chanting. That's another thing is we are not careful about our definitions. We come to the conclusions, but the definitions are very clear there. Means that otherwise, see, this is the problem. We don't accept the Madhyama as an advanced devotee. Right? Otherwise, we would look at things differently. Right? So the point of Shuddha Nam starts there. Pure devotee starts there. But we'll take it pure devotee simply means Uttama.
I think yesterday or the day before we read definition, Shuddha Nam means Harinam without any offense. But we don't.
Yeah, but that means that you're in your focus and everything like that, you're avoiding offenses and all that, and you're able to do that. While the neophyte doesn't even sometimes know he's committing offenses. It means a position is taken by what's prominent. You know? It means whatever is the prominence, then that's what we'll say it is. You know? Does that make sense? So when that steadiness is the prominence. So I've heard Rupa Goswami gives the proportion 60% is prominent, right? Rather than 51 and 49. You know what I'm saying? So that means 40% you still have to work with. So that's Shuddha Nam, but that's on the, within Shuddha Nam, that's the neophyte level. But now we're talking about devotee. So the actual neophyte devotee is the Madhyama. That's why the other is Prakrita neophyte.
Well, he is an actual beginning Shuddha Bhakta. Then when that matures, when that taste comes, then that's the preliminary to bhava. So just being stable, that's what situates him there. Then when he gets the taste and attachment, that's preliminary, that matures into bhava. But then bhava matures into prema. But that's the common platform.
Okay, could it be, throwing this out, you were saying, you know, you're making the distinction between the stage of bhava and bhava working through the different stages of bhakti. We have this definition of pure devotional service on the Abhilasha Tarsunya. But we also have the definition of pure devotional service as a higher level. So in the same way,
it's just different levels within pure devotional service. It's not that one counteracts the other. It's just, you know, just like prema, it's to say prema and mahabhava, mahabhava is still prema, you know, but there's categories within prema.
So is there that I can chant Shuddhanam but not be on the stage of Shuddhanam? Can we make that distinction? As a stage meaning...
Means you could chant Shuddhanam, but then when you stop chanting, then all these other material desires come up. So then you wouldn't say that they're specifically, means it depends on which is the prominence. So if your chanting of Shuddhanam is 60% and only 40% is other distractions, then you call it Shuddhanam. But that's the preliminary level. Right? So bhava means all these things have gone away, that 40% is gone, but there's still a fragrance. Right? And then purva rag means that fragrance is gone. But it's still not prema yet. You know, so there's nothing now in the way of prema, but still you have to cultivate it and develop it.
So then are we saying the distinction between the top level of Nama Vas and the beginning level Shuddha Bhakti is just that one is chanting without any material motive, just to please Krishna?
Yeah, I mean, just which is the prominence. Because the devotee might sincerely sit down, it's a big festival, is this, chant purely. But then at other times they don't chant purely. So the volume of not chanting purely is greater than the volume of chanting purely. So when the volume of chanting purely is greater than the volume of not chanting purely, then you call that the beginning stage of Shuddhanam. It's just proportion. You know? Or what's the prominence in the consciousness? Like Shraddha, it's not that there's more Shraddha, it's that's all you think about. At the stage of Shraddha, you're thinking about, do I have faith in Krishna? Do I take up this process, you know, get involved with these devotees? Do I have faith in Krishna? So that's why that's the major thing. It's called Shraddha. And the next stage, once you make that, then you want to associate with those who have made that same decision, so that's Sadhu Sangha. It's not that your Sadhu Sangha is of great caliber, but that's what you're looking for now. And then you want to become like them, so you take up the practice in a regulated way, so it's bhajana kriya. But it's still not regulated bhajana, I mean, it's still not stable bhajana kriya. So that means anarthas have to be taken. So that means that's the problem, getting rid of all those anarthas. Then stability is major. But that's actually nishta bhajana kriya. Right? So then now your sadhana is stable. Right? Then taste, it means that now you're thinking about the taste, not that it's necessarily there all the time, but you're thinking about that. Right? Then you get attached to that, right? So then it just goes on. You know, so it's bhava, you know, your ecstasies are like that, that the prema bhaktas have also. But they're not thinking about that. That's not the prominent element. The prominent element is the prema. Right? So in bhava, then the ecstasies in that, that's the problem, because that's the new thing. Does that make sense? So what's new is what's on the consciousness. So you combine that along with what's the proportion, and then it works. Okay? Yes? No?
I always thought when you chant Shuddhanam, that's when you get love with Krishna.
Yeah. It means when you chant Shuddhanam consistently, regularly, then it will mature into prema.
I thought this is the day you do it.
No. Shuddhanam starts, that's the point. The madhyama, that's the whole difficulty, is that we'll say a Shuddha Bhakta means someone in prema. Shuddha Bhakta means a madhyama. You know? That's the point. So that's where the problem is saying, oh, but you know, it has to be an Uttabhagatakari Nityasiddha, dropped out of the spiritual world, then they can be a guru. No, you have to be a pure devotee. Right? Like that.
That part I understood. I understand how it related to.
But as you mentioned here, is that all those go together. Means bhakti abhas, bhava abhas, nama abhas, vaishnava abhas, they all go together. So they're all the same level. So to that degree is that faith is there, that pure chanting is there, then that pure devotion is there, that pure being a pure devotee is there. So as if we start it from there, then it takes on a whole different kind of realm. We're able to distinguish better, But the distinguishment is not based on anything political or social. That the neophyte will do. But for the Madhyama, then you just know who's who. Is that? Yes, no?
Yeah.
Kind of? Okay.
Yeah.
You have time? Oh, no. That's done here. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Janitai Gaur Mehmani.